It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. In Chicago, in Cook County, in the suburbs, in Illinois. If you own a home, you see your home values dropping and your property taxes rising. Why? How does that work? And at the same time, the public sector worker unions, that means the people that work for government, not carpenters, not plumbers, not private sector guys, not electricians. Love the electricians. The public sector worker, like the teachers in Chicago, they don't like the 16 to 24% raise that they were offered, and they talked about going on strike. And as I tape this now, they're going on strike. They could settle in a day. Lori Lightfoot could cave. It really doesn't matter, because on one side, in one city of these tale of two cities, tale of two states, you've got Democrats and the workers' unions, the public sector worker unions, that are their backbone. This is the new machine. There are no Republicans anymore. Republicans don't really count. They've abrogated their responsibilities. He's back to Ogilvie and then Thompson with his ridiculous, florid excess in spending. Been ridiculous ever since, so they've abrogated all their role. Now it's just the Democrats and the public sector worker unions. And on the other side, you're sitting there at the kitchen table thinking about your family, thinking about your property values dropping as the taxes rise. And you know who's paying for it. And you know who doesn't like the deal that they're getting or the other deals that they're getting. And you think to yourself, my God, am I a chumbalone on the Chicago way? We'll be talking to Chris Roebling, longtime political consultant, man about town, cigar lover. And of course, Jeff Carlin is here, the executive producer of the Rokon Show with Anna DeVellantis, and my friend and a master baker and co-host. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, syndicated columnist of the Chicago Tribune, a member of its editorial board. And you know where you are? In that tale of two cities? You know which city you're in. You're on the Chicago way. On WGN Plus.
This is a thousand monkeys working at a thousand typewriters. Soon, they'll have written the greatest novel known to man. Let's see. It was the best of times. It was the blurst of times. You stupid monkey! You shut up.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
We are joined by, as the aforementioned, Chris Roebling.
Good morning.
The savvy consultant and also forward thinker who thinks about foreign policy and the state of the Republican Party, which there is no Republican Party. And it is Chris Roebling who came up with the idea of the combine.
You're very kind.
He reminded me once, I think we were having a cigar, or were we just talking about having a cigar? He reminded me about Teddy Roosevelt fighting the combine. And we do have a combine in Illinois and in Washington,
yeah,
in their Palace of Versailles.
And they all deserve a swift kick in the rear, and that's what Trump's given them.
I would offer more, but then the Jacobins have their own magazine now.
Oh my goodness. We're all class offenders, and you know what happens to them after the revolution.
Yeah, they kill us first.
We're going to be, you know, at the bottom of that nice river down there.
But that brings me to something. Yes. I'm getting a sense from the Democrats, as the Horowitz report and the John Durham investigation continue,
mm-hmm,
and inexorably it's going to unmask, I love to use that word, mm-hmm, unmask actors within the Obama administration that started this whole Russian collusion,
mm-hmm,
thing.
Mm-hmm.
the panic level is rising to the point where I read people that I used to respect, friends that I would respect, who would say, who are unleashing invective at Trump voters.
Right.
I was a Rand Paul guy, but Trump voters, as if they should be, I don't know, hounded down and, you know, sent to the Inquisition. What is going on with this business of punishing people?
I regret to inform your zillions of listeners, John.
Yeah.
And Jeff, that.
That means more than just Billy Gritsonis and Dan Proff.
Is Bill listening?
Yes, he is.
I that's great.
Yeah.
Hey, Bill.
Good guy.
So yeah, I mean, I think that the, one of the things that really affected me about the Obama administration was to see just how solidified the left had become in so many different institutions of American life. And I think prior to the Obama administration, there had been some effort to keep it quiet, but the Obama, the 8 years were a coming out party. And no pun intended. I'm just, you know, that was a time when folks, they were openly and I'd say proudly and I would say, you know, victoriously and self-regardingly leftist. And American society is right on the brink. And I think that's what this next election is about. And as flawed a vessel as Trump might be, he's the only horse that can stop these pygmies who are running on the other side.
And isn't that the nature of the whole election? That Republicans might not, I'm not a Democrat, obviously, but I'm not a Republican. I'm conservative, I guess, but I don't like his manner at all.
Right.
Or his personality, but then I didn't like Clinton's as well.
Right.
And we were told by the Democrats that it's policy that counts. And I'm just using their prescription.
First of all, I do want to acknowledge your original point, which I think is the single most important defining understanding of this current moment in which we find ourselves. And that is Nancy Pelosi and folks even above her pay grade, I think, rightly anticipated the double whammy of Durham and the IG report.
Horowitz.
So what we are about to learn, I think it is fair to anticipate, as folks who anticipated the empty, hollow nothingness of the Mueller report correctly, I now anticipate a very detailed look at constant abuse of official power under the Obama administration, starting with Barack Obama, because the buck stops there, no matter what he says or how he tries to deflect it.
Never forget that Susan Rice wrote that memo to herself 15 minutes after she left the White House officially, in which she said everything. We had a meeting with the president and Joe Biden.
Right.
And John Brennan and Clapper and Comey, but that everything was done, quote, by the book. That to me is a tell.
By excusing herself, she accused herself. But the fact is, we're now going to get various compilations of, you know, series of events. And I think the abuse was far beyond anything we saw during the Watergate era or anything that was sort of discussed or even conceived of in the Watergate era. I mean, this is the wholesale misdirection of American official authority into score settling on the political level. Now, having said all of that, going back to what your other point, Trump is a flawed vessel, in my humble opinion. I spent a lot of months on WGN television urging people to think twice before voting for Trump, and pointing out that if he gets involved, then there are going to be endless stories about former girlfriends who are going to be suing. You know, all of these things that have happened, and all of that was ignored by the primary voters. And then it ended up with a situation where it's either Trump or Hillary. So you get to the binary and you have to choose. Okay. Trump in office, I think, I understand that give or take, don't hold me to the specifics, but give or take more than 70, perhaps even more than 80% of the jobs created since the 20th day of January 2017 have gone to African Americans, Hispanics, and women. So of all new jobs created, you have seen a distribution of those new positions and that new income into those communities. And so there is a poll that Larry Elder cited yesterday indicating that U.S. African American registered males are as likely as not to be Trump voters. And this plus the legal statements that are going to come out of the Justice Department, both Durham and Horowitz, I think have led to this hysteria to which you are referring, John.
The hysteria, Jeff and Chris, is so intense. And I always wonder when I'm being herded, you know, when I'm being herded by shrieking banshees and harpies flapping their leather wings over my meager fare, my lunch of crusty bread and cheese.
What in the name of the gods are they?
Jason!
Are you Phineas?
Yes.
I'll tell you what you want to know. Only if you'll meet my price.
What is your price, then?
Free me from these tormenting harpies.
If Zeus sent those creatures to plague him, we'd be unwise to interfere.
That's my price.
Then we'll meet it, Phineas. We'll make you the master of the harpies.
That's from Jason and the Argonauts. But my first reaction is, why are we being herded so, you know,
right,
so much? And I think it's because of this coming.
There's no policy that anybody can discern out of, for instance, the Democratic debate this week. I mean, the Democratic debate this week was, are we going to go bankrupt quickly or a teeny bit less quickly?
The Hemingway. The Hemingway line, right?
We are not in a... There isn't a, what we used to call in philosophy class, a consistent, comprehensive, and cohesive alternative. I mean, what you have on the other side is this grab bag of lifestyle preferences, right?
That are signaling, now, yeah, signaling to the demographic of choice, right?
Right.
Women, I don't know. I've heard Buttigieg referred to many times as the mannequin in the Macy's men's department in Mishawaka, but he's really kind of vanilla personality.
And I think he's profoundly incompetent by his own admission.
He's the mayor of a... You wouldn't elect him county commissioner in Cook County.
He'd have a hard time getting to be a Congress thing.
Right.
Okay? And this is a guy who, in the middle of his presidential campaign, stops and blows the whistle and gets a plane home to beautiful South Bend, which, of course, is a lovely spot. And he then stands up at a press conference and announces two key findings. Number one, I have failed to integrate the police department of South Bend. Number two, I came out with some mild community policing policies and asked my police department, as it stands today, to follow those since I was the mayor and I got elected and they're just civil servants. And my conclusion is they have failed to follow those. So these Democrats who are looking at this guy thinking, oh, here is somebody ready to be, you know, whatever you think of Trump, you know that he can physically, you know, command the juggernaut of the United States federal government. Okay.
And even he's fighting, permit me, the Kamalists in the federal government, right? And that's what that whole business of the Comey thing and the Horowitz and all that's about are the Kamalists in the government fighting the elected president.
Folks who, if I may be allowed, folks who, for instance, send a career foreign service officer to Capitol Hill and who then says that her writ proceeds from the Department of State. Well, I'm sorry. Ambassadors Extraordinary Plenipotentiary of the United States of America only since 1789, when the new Constitution came in after the Articles of Confederation. Ambassadors have proceeded from the President of the United States, not from the State Department. She didn't work for the State. Her promise, she wasn't even working for the State Department. She was working not for Trump. She worked for George Soros. And I think the abuse that we're going to uncover here to any fair-minded person, okay, so I'm leaving our friend Eric Zorn out of that group. But any fair-minded person...
It takes a village. That's what I tell all my readers who say, well, I can't take your paper anymore. I said, it takes a village. Takes a village.
There's been nothing like it. And it truly is the, I hate to use the word apotheosis, but I mean, it is truly the, everything that you wrote about, you have written about, everything you wrote about before Obama got elected in Chicago, all of those things that we witnessed sometimes together and sometimes from our separate vantage points, you know, all of that got stuck, you know, crammed into the West Wing of the White House, courtesy of David and Rahm, and ultimately Valerie. And Valerie was the president, and Obama was a suit, and Michelle called the shots with Valerie. I mean, I don't, anybody who thinks something different, I'm not really sure which planet they're on or what reality they relate to.
I hope that when they build the Temple of Love and Fealty in Jackson Park, that she's not running. I keep going back and forth. Should she run, Michelle, or not run? Obviously, she's not qualified to be president of the United States, but it would make a good drama.
You know, it's so emblematic. I mean, the Democrats will toss out a due process when it comes to something like, say, the impeachment of a president who's been popularly elected. As the same way that they'll toss out, you know, to build a temple of fealty and
how dare praise. You, Cass and Roebling and I guess Jeff, I'm not sure.
Jeff's keeping quiet. I don't know what he thinks.
I don't want to get involved in this temple of love thing.
But I mean, Olmsted and the entire, the genius of American landscape architect, forget about that. We have to put up a Mayan temple.
Well, that's...
Who's going to be the first human sacrifice?
Mine. My head will roll down the steps of it.
Bouncing.
They'll have a midway, right?
And some of you may remember, but I have recommended that the one thing that pyramid is missing with a flat top is a gigantic Obama head. Made of paper mache with glowing green eyes that can focus and turn on ball bearings, turn whenever it sees injustice.
Right.
You know? I think it should be a giant chia head, you know, green.
Yeah, with green.
About the green chia. I actually wanted to follow back on this. So the Buttigieg thing, I think, is interesting because one of the underlying currents is that people feel the animosity is terrible and the vitriol is at the worst it's ever been and people are so separated and. And
That's a strategy of the press corps.
Well, but it's also a reality. I mean,
that's the strategy is to make the suburbanites queasy about voting for him and wear them down until they say, "Oh, okay, all right."
Well,
with Pete.
But my point is not that nobody's going to vote for because, like you said, he's not. All the people who are 15 people who are running still for president on the Dems. He's not going to win. I mean, but he does draw in people to be like, okay, well, you know, if I can kind of like him and then he can throw his support behind somebody else, then that person gains the likability factor of Pete says, well, Pete says this guy's good or this woman's good. And then that becomes the whole narrative for them to take down someone with Trump, who is, regardless of what he's done as president, in the eyes of lots of people, is just a bad guy, regardless of what he's doing, regardless of the jobs he's creating, regardless of the economy.
People just
see him as a greasy, terrible person,
Jeff,
that they don't like.
The onslaught that this president has received from our business, we've talked about this from the beginning, is so over the top. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve criticism, because he does.
Of course he does.
And we have to criticize. But the concerted effort among the what I call the Democratic media complex, but really it's the Beltway core, has decided this is not our guy. We want to destroy him. So they've been pushing hysterically for 3 years and with wild stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just, I wonder if it ever gets old to people.
I don't think that, I mean, I understand what you're saying, Jeff, and I credit the sense that, you know, Trump's sort of innate or his
vulgarity.
He's a bore and an unrefined guy, even though he's a multi-billion or whatever the heck. Maybe he's got 100 million instead of a billion. Who knows what he's got. But anyway, he has an airplane apart from Air Force One. So anyway.
And gold faucets.
Yeah, right. He's a rich guy with gold faucets. So whatever the heck he is, he's a bore. And folks understand that, and I think there are a lot of folks out there who weren't electing Mother Teresa because she never filed to run. Okay, and
if she only had
she would have lost. But in any case, I think that John's point, you know, this we have seen, in my opinion, I know this might sound like I'm disconnected from reality, but I truly believe the Democratic Party is at any one given time, as in say today or a year ago or 3 years ago, it's only about a national election and a half, give or take, from irrelevance. Okay. This is my theory. And my theory is they need the illegals. They need the felons. They need all of the folks that, you know, don't want to vote, right? They need the motor voter. They need the vote fraud. They need all of this stuff.
That's why you can't have voter ID.
Right.
Is it racist?
And it's this exact point that you're making, John, about the Cook County context. The public employee unions are feeding away. All of the rest of us are supposed to fund that. No one has checked the actuarial tables. It's impossible to square any of these circles, and devil take the hindmost. And the hindmost is going to be the property taxpayer in Cook County. And at the national level, the issue is eventually there will be hell to pay on the fiscal side.
What worries me more than just the partisanship on all sides here and the media, the Beltway medias, they're really the adjunct of the Democratic Party.
Right. Now. They're the unreported super PAC.
What concerns me is the relentless attacks on, I don't care about attacking Trump. I mean, he's a big boy and he's going to deal with it.
Right.
It's the unrelenting attacks on the Trump voters, 62 million people.
Right.
To call them constantly in our business, racists and scum.
Yeah.
We're far past Hillary's deplorables that she test marketed it among her friends in the Hamptons and so forth, and then used it. It wasn't an accident. So when the managers of culture take 62 million people and kick them to the margins and ridicule them,
right?
What do they think is going to happen long term?
Right, right.
I mean, to me, it's a danger.
Well, it's destabilizing to our democracy, destabilizing to the social fabric. And here again, it's exactly what they say they don't want to do, but we know that they are doing it. And in this connection, I think another, if I may take a look back at the week that was, you know, we had this Veritas report on CNN come out. Oh. And I think it is as damning. You know, I just think so many times these reports from the inside come out and you end up, we never need to hear another word about CNN because Jeff Zucker in the recordings has spoken for himself and for that entity.
My name is Kerry Porch. I'm a satellite uplink technician. I'm a contractor at the CNN Washington, D.C. Bureau. I decided to wear a hidden camera. I decided to secretly record the 9 a.m. rundown call meetings, and it's basically run by Jeff Zucker, the president of CNN.
And then
good morning, everybody.
He did.
Okay, let's start with Washington, please. I don't care about the OSF in the event. Okay, I don't care about him. Let's just stay very focused on impeachment.
We're moving towards impeachment. I mean, don't, like, you know, we shouldn't pretend, oh, this is going one way. And so all these moves are moves towards impeachment.
And he's not an apple or a banana. He's the boss of CNN.
It is no longer a journalistic enterprise, just like you say the Beltway Media is no longer a journalistic enterprise. And in fact, I don't think that we've got anything approaching a academic enterprise when you talk about any number of professors and university. You know, I mean, it's just the left has done a wholesale takeover and they desperately cling to whatever power they can get from officialdom. And that's why we're dealing with the hysteria that you describe.
Now, people can leave Chicago and Cook County as the Democrats have their party is Democratic politicians and the public workers unions and property taxpayers have no party. The Republican Party, as Chris Roebling noted many years ago, was terminally ill and he tried to save it and it didn't and it wouldn't listen to him.
Beyond my powers, that's for sure.
And so people can leave and they do. It's called the Illinois Exodus. But I'm not leaving the United States. I'm not like some, you know, Hollywood twit.
Right. Right.
Who's going to say I'm leaving the United States if Chief Warren and her pemmican and
folks
her,
have got a
crab, you know, omelets.
I think we're looking right now at 34, 35 states. I think for all of the sound and fury, it signifies so little. I think that we're looking at 34 to 35 states, and I think that folks in the borderline or the battleground states have just got to, if they believe in what the United States is really all about, this is the time for them to get organized and get out there and find their friends and make sure that Wisconsin stays in the right collar, or Michigan or Ohio. You know, I mean, I hope that we pick up Nevada. I hope we pick up, not sure about Colorado, but possibly New Mexico. I think that this is the most technologically sophisticated and well-orchestrated reelect campaign in U.S. history that's being run right now by the Trump Organization.
Well, we shall see, and I hope you and I will. Jeff doesn't smoke, but we can have a cigar.
I would love that.
What would be your preference?
Cruz Real.
Oh, I remember those. I remember those. They were only $3
then. The dear departed Cruz Real we made famous on Wells Street.
For Chris Roebling, thanks for being here.
So good to be here. Thank you for having me. Great to see you both.
Thank you.
It's just my fine. It's just my fine. You can watch your name.
You know, if you're sitting there like blind Tiresias trying to eat your bread and cheese and the harpies are coming, befouling your meal every day, all day, as the gods demanded, you might want to think, I've got to break up my, you know, this dismal existence of mine. I should listen to the Chicago Way. And thank you for doing that. Tell your friends. Find us on iTunes. Share us when I post it on Facebook and on Twitter. You can find us iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you find free podcasts, because it's free. Subscribe. And we want you to give us kick-ass reviews. And maybe, I don't know, if I was mayor, I'd maybe cut you a contract. For Chris Roebling, talking about the future of this republic. And for Jeff Carlin, WGN producer of The Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, nationally syndicated columnist, member of the Chicago Tribune's editorial board. You're stuck in that place, in one city or the other, in the tail of two cities, on the Chicago Way. All right, Bernie and the Spice Girls. That's a new cartoon.
Okay, I got something before we go on. It turns out that I actually kind of know, not in a personal friendship level, but I've met a couple of times with a guy who was Mick Jagger's paramedic for his concerts in Chicago. All of these guys have paramedics who are assigned to them. Can't be 25 feet away except when they're on stage. And that's in case whether you're young and, you know, John
Especially
Bon Jovi.
When you're an 80-year-old rocker.
Right. So he's known Jagger for 15 years. He's right. Toured with him in any number of spots. Yeah. Fascinating story. Fascinating guy. And has a real, you know, back and forth relationship with Jagger. And when he shows up in Chicago, I knew you'd be here. Anyway. So at the end of the first concert, which I happened to attend because my son gave it to me for Father's Day.
Nice.
And we went together. At the end of the first concert, Jagger was walking off the stage with this guy. And he turns to him and he says, "Oh, I guess that new heart valve actually works." The first thing the guy said. Number two, the Stones have a tradition. They always have a beer at the end of every concert together. All the guys on stage singing, playing the piano, whether it's one of the four real Stones but they all have a beer together. They bring up a case of beer and everybody has a beer. Jagger handed the paramedic his beer. He said, "You know what? Made a lot of money tonight. I think I can afford giving you this beer."
Nice.
Yeah. He said Jagger's amazing. And first night they went to Kingston Mines. Jagger, the driver knew and called ahead. So they just walked in. Jagger, whoever was on stage, said, "Ladies and gentlemen, Mick Jagger."
He came up on stage?
He walked up. He sang three songs. And the second night, the Wednesday night, in the car, Jagger says, "Buddy Guys." And the guy calls Buddy Guys, walks in, goes on stage. "Ladies and gentlemen, Mick Jagger is joining us for three songs." things. Then they hop back into the limo, and the guy sticks with him until Jagger enters the peninsula, at which point there is another paramedic who is stationed in the lobby of the peninsula until...
I got to tell you one now.
Okay.
Mick Jagger, when he's in Chicago, and he did it again, hits a certain restaurant. What's his favorite restaurant?
The Billy Goat.
Brondeal.
What's it called?
Have you not been to Brondeal?
Brondeal. He likes it?
Yeah. So do I.
What is it?
My favorite restaurant.
Where is
Clark Street. Brondeal is a French restaurant run by Michelin chef Kerry Nahabedian, a friend of ours.
Yes, a fantastic chef.
Oh, wow.
In the old school.
You've never heard of Brondeal. Perfect.
I'm not in the highfalutin area.
This is totally highfalutin, but probably the most delicious meal I've ever had in my life.
If they've got steak free, I'm there, baby.
There you go. All right, ready?
All right.